Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive. Today we're going to be looking at something that's super important for just about every aspect of life: communication. And to make things even more interesting, we're going to be looking at communication through the lens of nursing education.
Because when you think about it, nurses are incredible communicators. They have to be. They deal with patients who are often in vulnerable situations, and they need to be able to explain complex medical information in a way that's clear, compassionate, and easy to understand.
So true. And it's not just about talking to patients. Nurses also have to communicate effectively with doctors, other nurses, and even families. It's a constant flow of information, and they have to be able to navigate it all seamlessly.
Yeah, and to help them do that, nurses use a variety of communication models. These models provide a framework for understanding how communication works and for identifying potential pitfalls.
Models? Huh. That sounds kind of academic. Can you give me an example of one of these communication models?
Sure. One that's commonly used in nursing education is the four-sided model developed by Friedemann Schultz von Thun.
Okay, four-sided model. What's that all about?
Well, it basically says that every message we send has four sides to it, or four levels of meaning.
Four levels of meaning. So it's like there are four different ways to interpret every message.
Exactly. And these four sides are the factual level, the self-revelation level, the relationship level, and the appeal level.
Okay, I'm going to need a little more explanation on that. What exactly do those levels mean?
Sure, let's break them down. The factual level is the most straightforward. It's the literal content of the message. The facts, the data, the information.
Right, so that's the what of the message. Pretty basic.
Exactly. But then we have the self-revelation level, which is all about what the message reveals about the sender, their feelings, their values, their personality.
Okay, so it's not just about the words themselves, but also about what those words tell us about the person speaking them. Interesting.
Right. And then there's the relationship level. This is all about how the message defines or redefines the relationship between the sender and the receiver.
So, like, is the message respectful or disrespectful, formal or informal, supportive or critical?
Exactly. The tone and the wording can reveal a lot about the dynamics between the people communicating. And then we have the final level, the appeal level. This is all about what the sender wants the receiver to do with the message. It's the call to action.
Ah, so it's like, close the window or pass the salt or please be more careful next time.
Precisely. And what makes this model so powerful is that it highlights how misunderstandings can happen when the sender and receiver are focused on different levels of the message.
Oh, I can definitely see that happening. Like, someone might be trying to convey a factual piece of information, but the receiver might interpret it as a personal criticism.
Exactly. The nursing materials actually give a great example of this. Imagine a nurse saying to a student, "The patient's chart isn't updated yet."
Okay. Seems like a pretty straightforward statement. Just a fact. What's the problem?
Well, on the surface, it does seem like just a fact. But depending on the tone of voice, the body language, and the overall context, that message could also be interpreted on the self-revelation level.
As in, the nurse might be feeling frustrated or annoyed that the chart isn't updated.
Exactly. Or it could even be interpreted on the relationship level, with the student feeling like they're being reprimanded or that their competence is being questioned.
Wow. That simple statement suddenly has so many layers. And it makes me think about all the times I've probably misinterpreted someone's message because I was focused on the wrong level.
It happens to all of us. And the four-sided model is a great tool for becoming more aware of those different levels and for navigating communication more effectively.
I'm starting to see how understanding these communication models can be really helpful, not just for nurses, but for everyone. But I have to admit, I'm a bit curious about this iceberg model you mentioned earlier.
Ah, yes, the iceberg model. It's another powerful way of visualizing communication and understanding that there's often a lot more going on beneath the surface than what we see or hear.
I'm intrigued. Tell me more about how that works.
Well, picture an iceberg floating in the ocean.
Okay, got it. Big chunk of ice, most of it underwater.
Right. Now imagine that the tip of the iceberg, the part that's visible above the water, represents the words we speak, the actual content of our message.
Okay, so far so good.
But the vast majority of the iceberg, the part that's hidden underwater, represents all the unspoken things that influence our communication. Our emotions, our values, our past experiences, our cultural background, our assumptions, our beliefs, our motivations.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff lurking beneath the surface. So you're saying that even a simple hello could have a whole world of meaning behind it, depending on the person's underwater world.
Exactly. And the iceberg model reminds us that effective communication isn't just about exchanging words, it's about understanding the person behind the words.
This is really making me rethink how I listen to people.
Yeah.
I'm starting to realize how much I might be missing.
It's a game changer for sure. And there's actually another model, the Ryman-Toman model.
Okay, so we've been talking about all these different ways to look at communication, which is really fascinating. But now I'm wondering how we can actually use this information to become better learners ourselves.
Well, you know, it's interesting because these nursing modules actually dive into that very question. They talk about how understanding your own learning style can make a huge difference in how effectively you absorb information.
Learning styles. Okay, I think I've heard of that before.
Yeah.
But remind me, what's that all about?
Basically, it's the idea that everyone has a preferred way of learning. Some people are visual learners, meaning they learn best by seeing things like diagrams and charts.
Right.
Others are auditory learners, so they learn best by hearing information, like through lectures or podcasts.
And then there are the hands-on folks, right?
Yeah.
The ones who have to actually do something to really learn it.
Exactly. Those are the kinesthetic learners. They learn by doing, by experiencing, by moving their bodies.
Okay. That's all coming back to me now. But is there like an actual model or framework for understanding these different learning styles?
There is. One of the most popular ones is the VARK model.
VARK. What does that stand for?
It stands for visual, auditory, reading, writing, and kinesthetic. So it covers those four main learning styles we were just talking about.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So tell me more about each of those VARK learning styles. What are some of the characteristics of a visual learner, for example?
Well, as I mentioned, visual learners really thrive on visual information. They love things like mind maps, diagrams, colorful presentations, anything that helps them see the information laid out in a clear and engaging way.
So it's not just about reading text on a page. They really benefit from those visual elements.
Exactly. They might even doodle or draw while they're listening to a lecture or reading a book. It helps them process and remember the information better.
Interesting. And what about auditory learners? What are their strengths?
Well, as you might guess, auditory learners are all about sound. They love lectures, podcasts, audiobooks, anything that allows them to hear the information being presented.
So they might be the ones who are always talking things through or explaining things out loud to themselves.
Exactly. They might also find it helpful to record themselves reading their notes and then listen back to the recording. It helps the information sink in better.
Makes sense. Okay, what about the reading writing learners? I guess they're the ones who are most comfortable with traditional learning methods.
You could say that. They love taking detailed notes, summarizing information in their own words, and creating outlines and study guides.
So they're really good at processing information through the written word.
Right. And they might also find it helpful to rewrite their notes or even create their own textbooks or summaries of the material.
And lastly, the kinesthetic learners. They're the ones who are always on the move, right?
Yeah, definitely. They need to be active and engaged to really learn. They might pace around while they're studying, or they might fidget or doodle.
So for them, sitting still and listening to a lecture for an hour is probably torture.
It could be. They really benefit from hands-on activities like building models, doing experiments, or role-playing. Anything that lets them physically interact with the material.
This is all so interesting, and it makes me realize that there's really no one-size-fits-all approach to learning.
Exactly. And the more we understand about our own individual learning style, the better equipped we are to create a learning environment that works for us.
So how do we figure out what our learning style is? Is there like a quiz we can take?
There are quizzes out there, but honestly, one of the best ways is to just pay attention to how you naturally learn best. Think about what kinds of activities you enjoy the most, what helps you remember information easily, and what makes you feel engaged and motivated when you're learning.
So it's about self-awareness and reflection.
Exactly. And once you have a better understanding of your learning style, you can start to experiment with different study techniques and strategies that cater to your strengths.
Like, if I'm a visual learner, I might create mind maps or use flashcards with pictures on them.
That's a great idea. Or if you're an auditory learner, you might try recording yourself, reading your notes aloud, and then listening back to the recording.
And if I'm a kinesthetic learner, I might try building a model or acting out a scene to help me remember the information.
Exactly. The key is to find what works best for you.
This is really making me think about how I've been approaching learning all these years. And I'm realizing that I've probably been unintentionally sabotaging myself by using methods that don't really align with my learning style.
It happens, but the good news is that once you become aware of your learning style, you can make those adjustments and start learning more effectively.
Okay, so we've talked about the VARK model, but the nursing modules mention two other learning styles that go beyond that.
Oh, right. They also talk about person-oriented and media-oriented learners.
Interesting. So are these like completely separate learning styles?
Not necessarily. They can kind of overlap with the VARK model, but they highlight some additional factors that can influence how we learn.
Okay, I'm curious. Tell me more about these two additional learning styles. What's a person-oriented learner like?
Well, as the name suggests, they really thrive on social interaction and collaboration. They love learning in groups, bouncing ideas off of others, and getting feedback from their peers.
So they're the ones who are always asking questions in class and starting discussions.
Exactly. And they might also learn best through mentorship or by working closely with a tutor or instructor.
And media-oriented learners, I'm guessing they're the ones who are all about technology.
You got it. They're comfortable using computers, tablets, smartphones, all the latest gadgets and gizmos to learn.
So online courses, educational apps, interactive simulations, all that stuff is right up their alley.
Right. And they might also be drawn to multimedia learning resources, like videos, podcasts, and interactive websites.
This is fascinating. I'm definitely seeing myself in a few of these categories. It's like I'm a little bit of everything.
That's not unusual. Most people are actually a blend of different learning styles. The key is to figure out which ones are dominant for you and then use that information to create a learning approach that maximizes your strengths.
Okay, so let's say I've identified my dominant learning styles. What's the next step? How do I actually use this information to improve my learning?
That's a great question. And luckily, these nursing modules offer some really practical advice. They emphasize the importance of something called experiential learning.
Experiential learning. Isn't that the idea that we learn best by actually experiencing something firsthand?
That's the gist of it.
Okay.
And they actually break it down into a 5-step process: experiencing, publishing, processing, generalizing, and applying.
5 steps. Okay, walk me through those. What does the experiencing stage look like?
Well, as you said, it's all about having that direct, hands-on encounter with the subject matter. Think about a nursing student practicing taking a patient's blood pressure, or a musician learning a new song by actually playing it on their instrument.
So it's about that initial immersion, that first encounter with the skill or concept you're trying to learn.
Exactly. And then we move on to the publishing stage.
Publishing, as in writing a book.
Not quite.
Yeah.
In this context, publishing just means sharing your experience with others in some way. It could be through a discussion, a presentation, a written reflection, or even just by teaching someone else what you've learned.
Ah, okay. So it's about putting that experience into words or action that can be shared with others.
Precisely. And that leads to the third stage, processing. This is where you take some time to really think about the experience you just had. What did you learn? What challenges did you face? What surprised you?
So it's like taking a step back to analyze and make sense of the experience.
Exactly. And that analysis then leads to the fourth stage, generalizing. This is where you try to extract some key principles or insights from the experience that you can apply to other situations.
So it's about identifying those transferable skills or knowledge that go beyond that one specific experience.
Right. And finally, we have the applying stage. This is where you take those insights and actually put them into practice in a new situation.
So it's that crucial step of taking the learning from the theoretical to the practical.
Absolutely. And you know, there's a really powerful tool for enhancing this whole experiential learning process, and it's something we touched on earlier, reflection.
Ah, yes. Reflection.
Yeah.
Using the Gibbs cycle, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Remember how we talked about how nurses use the Gibbs cycle to reflect on their patient interactions? Well, this cycle can actually be applied to any learning experience.
Okay, remind me how that works again.
Well, it starts with describing the experience, then you move on to analyzing your feelings, evaluating what went well and what didn't, and so on. It's a structured way to really dissect the experience and extract valuable lessons from it.
I love that. It's like a step-by-step guide for turning our experiences into valuable learning opportunities.
And you know, speaking of valuable learning opportunities, these nursing modules also have some fascinating insights on assessment.
Assessment. I usually think of tests and grades when I hear that word. Is that what they're talking about?
It's part of it, but they actually take a much broader view of assessment. They see it as a tool for growth and development, not just for measuring performance.
So it's not just about judging right or wrong, but about figuring out how to improve.
Exactly. And they make a distinction between two types of assessment. formative and summative.
Okay, what's the difference between those two?
Formative assessment is all about ongoing feedback, those observations and suggestions you get along the way that help you adjust your approach and improve your skills.
So it's like having a coach or a mentor who's giving you tips and guidance as you go.
That's a great analogy. Summative assessment, on the other hand, is more like a final evaluation. It measures what you've learned at the end of a unit or a course.
So formative assessment is about helping you learn, while summative assessment is about measuring how much you've learned.
That's a good way to put it.
And I imagine in nursing, both types of assessment are crucial.
Absolutely. But here's where it gets really interesting. They also talk about the importance of self-assessment.
Self-assessment. So it's not just about relying on feedback from others, but about evaluating our own progress and identifying areas where we need to improve.
Exactly. And that ability to honestly assess our own strengths and weaknesses is crucial for lifelong learning, no matter what field we're in.
Oh, wow. This is all so eye-opening. I'm starting to see how communication, learning styles, experiential learning, and assessment all fit together to create this holistic approach to personal and professional development.
And speaking of professional development, these modules also delve into some really interesting techniques for actually teaching others.
Okay, so we've explored how to communicate effectively and how to tailor our learning to our own unique style. But now I'm curious about the art of teaching itself.
Mm-hmm.
What can we learn from these nursing modules about how to effectively guide others through the learning process?
Well, they actually have some really insightful models and techniques for teaching, and one that stood out to me is the four-step method. It's a really clear and practical approach that can be applied to almost any teaching situation.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What are these four steps?
The first step is all about preparation. It's where you lay the groundwork for learning, making sure the learner understands the goal, the process, and has all the necessary tools and resources.
So it's like setting the stage, creating that foundation for success.
Exactly. Then we move on to step two, demonstration. This is where the instructor actually shows the learner how it's done, modeling the skill or task step by step.
Ah, the classic show, don't tell approach. I like it.
It's a powerful way to learn. And then step three is imitation. This is where the learner gets a chance to try it themselves, mimicking what they just observed.
So it's all about hands-on practice, putting those newly acquired skills to the test.
Precisely. And finally, step four is practice and control. The learner continues to practice the skill, getting feedback and guidance along the way until they've mastered it.
It's that journey of refinement, honing those skills until they become second nature.
Exactly. And you know, these modules also mention an expanded version of this model called the VENUK model.
VENUK. That's quite a mouthful. What does that stand for?
It stands for demonstrate, explain, imitate, practice, and control.
Okay, so it's basically the same four steps, but with a little more nuance.
Right. The VENUK model breaks down the demonstration and explanation stage into more specific steps. So instead of just showing and explaining at the same time, you separate those actions.
That makes sense. So first, you demonstrate this skill at a normal pace, letting the learner see the big picture.
Exactly. Then you break it down step by step, explaining each element in detail.
It's like watching a chef make a dish first, and then getting a detailed explanation of each ingredient and technique.
Exactly. It provides that extra layer of clarity and guidance for the learner.
I can see how that would be really helpful, especially for complex skills. Now, you also mentioned something called cognitive apprenticeship earlier. What's that all about?
This model is fascinating because it takes the idea of traditional apprenticeship, you know, learning a craft from a master, and applies it to cognitive skills like critical thinking and problem solving.
So instead of just learning a trade, you're learning how to think like an expert in a particular field.
Precisely. And the source material outlines six key teaching methods that are used in cognitive apprenticeship: modeling, coaching, scaffolding, articulation, reflection, and exploration.
Okay, those are some powerful words. Break those down for me. What does modeling look like in this context?
Modeling in cognitive apprenticeship is about the instructor verbalizing their thought process as they demonstrate a skill. They're basically thinking out loud, explaining their decisions, and making their reasoning transparent to the learner.
So it's like giving the learner a window into your expert mind, showing them not just what you're doing, but why you're doing it.
Exactly. And that can be incredibly valuable for the learner because it helps them understand the underlying principles and strategies that guide expert performance.
And what about coaching? How does that differ from modeling?
Coaching is more about providing guidance and support during the learning process. It's like having a mentor who's there to offer feedback, answer questions, and help the learner navigate challenges.
So it's that personalized support system that can make a huge difference in a learner's success.
Absolutely. And then we have scaffolding, which is about providing temporary support to help the learner reach a higher level of understanding or skill. It's like those training wheels on a bike.
They provide stability and support until the rider is confident enough to go it alone.
Exactly. And in cognitive apprenticeship, scaffolding might involve breaking down a complex task into smaller, more manageable steps, or providing prompts and checklists to guide the learner's thinking.
It's about providing that extra support structure to help them succeed. Now, what about articulation?
Articulation is all about encouraging learners to put their understanding into words. It's about prompting them to explain their reasoning, to justify their decisions, and to basically make their thinking visible.
So it's about helping them clarify their own thinking and communicate it effectively to others.
Exactly. And this ties in beautifully with the next method, reflection. We've talked about this before, but it's so crucial for deepening learning. It's that process of pausing, stepping back, and analyzing our experiences to extract valuable lessons.
It's like turning those experiences into gold nuggets of wisdom.
And finally, we have exploration. This is about encouraging learners to go beyond the structured curriculum, to experiment, to ask their own questions, and to become active seekers of knowledge.
It's about fostering that sense of curiosity and that love of lifelong learning.
Exactly. And it's incredible to see how these nursing training modules emphasize this holistic approach to learning, focusing not just on acquiring knowledge, but on developing critical thinking skills, problem-solving abilities, and that intrinsic motivation to keep learning and growing.
This has been such an incredible deep dive. We've explored communication models, learning styles, experiential learning, teaching techniques, and so much more. It's amazing how much we can learn from the world of nursing education.
It really is. And I hope our listeners are feeling as inspired as I am to apply these concepts to their own lives, whether they're nurses, students, teachers, or just lifelong learners like ourselves.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, we encourage you to think about your own communication patterns, your learning style, and how you approach teaching and learning. Experiment with these techniques and see what works best for you.
Remember, the journey of learning and growth is ongoing. There's always something new to discover.
Thanks for joining us, and until next time.